Money FM 89.3, best of the evening runway. Culture Club.
Money FM 89.3, it is the evening runway. I'm Elliot Danker. It's time now for Culture Club. Here's a good one. Would you eat a new subspecies of bird? Let me explain a little bit. So this is Forged by Vow, pioneers in cultured meat. They have created an entirely new subspecies of animal called Quelea. It's solely for the purposes of eating. Don't get me wrong. What's the secret recipe here? Japanese quail cells. Okay, so Quelea is made from Forge Parfait. It's the very first product from Forge and the world's first cultured parfait. Now, it's unlike anything seen before in cultured meat. Forged Parfait brings flavor, texture, that combination that you really can't find anywhere else. And in fact, Singaporean gastronomers will be the very first in the world to taste Forged Parfait at this exclusive dinner series, Forged at Mandala Club. This is held at Mori within Mandala Club from April the 12th to April 27th. We're going to find out a little bit more about this. In the studio with me is George Pepu, who's the CEO and founder of Vow. How are you, George?
Very well, thank you, Elliot. Thanks for having me.
I hope I got that right. Creating a new bird? What's the idea here?
Well, so that's really a metaphor for what we're doing as a business. It's a way of sort of suggesting how we see the world changing. Okay. Rather than trying to remake the meat that we already eat and enjoy today, what we set out to do when I founded Vow 5 years ago was to create new meat that people like me, that eat meat regularly, can add to their diet for reasons that we choose because it offers us something new and something distinctive. And we thought, what better way to share that message than by talking about something that doesn't exist in nature and using the metaphor of an entirely new species?
Do you mind if I probe that a little bit? Are we looking at, with this new type of food in that sense, are we looking at targeting people who don't eat meat or people who don't eat meat and are also health conscious? Is this a healthier option or it's in line with a more sustainable option? Because both are different reasons.
It's actually completely the opposite. Our interest is targeting at people that eat meat regularly and really enjoy it. And so rather than this being a replacement for meat, it's something to add to your diet because it offers a new sensory experience.
So it's all about the senses. It's all about that enjoyment, curiosity.
Absolutely. And that all comes back to, I mean, ultimately, the reason that I founded Vow and that we've been working so hard on the business for the last 5 years is sustainability.
Right.
But to have an impact on sustainability, you need to sell food to people that would otherwise eat a less sustainable food, and especially meat, to eat in exactly the same occasion.
Okay.
And we believe the way that we start doing that we start making that behavioral transition is by offering foods that can sit on the same plate as meat because they offer a new sensory experience in some of the best dining locations around the world, starting right here in Singapore.
So this is meat, not meat? I'm just picturing someone who's listening right now going, so is this meat or not? How would you answer that?
So like meat, it's grown from animal cells. We just do it outside of the animal.
Okay.
And so what we do is we take cells, a sample of animal, and separate out the cells that would repair muscle, fat, and connective tissue, give them all the nutrients that they would otherwise receive in the animal, sugars, salts, amino acids, vitamins, minerals, etc. And then we put them in a very clean environment where they're allowed to grow and grow and grow. And then we separate that, package it, add in any other components that we want, and then ultimately lands on your plate.
George, I find this really fascinating, and I'm a science fiction kind of guy. Where did this inspiration come from for you to dive into this world?
I mean, I used to be a chef while I was studying a biochemistry degree, and so I've always sort of had this balance of science and culinary inspiration.
Right.
And seeing a lot of what was happening really about 5 or 6 years ago, and a lot of companies raising a lot of money, generating a lot of attention, replacing meat with the same thing or attempting to replace meat with the same thing. As someone with a culinary background, it just felt like this really boring way of seeing the future. It's like we have this incredible suite of technologies that we can use to make literally anything. And it's like, if you can make anything, do you really want to make a beef burger?
Yeah.
And no one seemed to be asking that question of how do we use this to create things which are new and different and exciting, and people choose selfishly overeating meat as opposed to having to make a sacrifice and have a worse experience or a more expensive product for the benefit of the planet at the detriment of their own experience.
So this is why you're not doing this with chicken, beef, or pork, you're exactly. going for Japanese quail.
Exactly.
Why'd you decide on Japanese quail in particular, though?
So as a company, we've spent 5 years testing out a bunch of different species.
Yeah.
Pretty much anything you can imagine. It's up to around 50 species now. And of those, Japanese quail was the first one that grew really well and tasted really good.
Oh,
and
okay.
So that was the one which we were able to bring to market soonest, but it definitely won't be the last thing that you see from us.
This is really difficult. This next question is really difficult to describe the... I know you brought some samples, but describe the taste.
Sure.
What is the closest to it?
I think that's part of the wonderful part about this is there are elements of familiarity and nostalgia, okay. but there's also a lot of elements that are new. And so with Forge Parfait in particular, we were really focused on creating an impossible contrast, a balance of something which is quite rich and umami heavy with those sort of metallic-y, almost livery notes that you'd expect from a parfait, balanced with this very light and creamy texture so you can keep going back to it. And so it's a really unusual contrast. Has some hints of like a pate, has some hints of almost like foie gras, but it's also
my
really
favorite.
Different. And it is very rich and very, very decadent.
I'm definitely going to try this. Do you ever worry when you create something like that about allergies? You know, like, for example, I'm allergic to crustaceans, but I don't figure that out until it actually happens. Is this the same process when we come to meat that's created like that?
It's one of many, many considerations that we go through working with the food regulators, in this case, the Singapore Food Agency. In the case of any product made with cultured Japanese quail, it has a similar allergen profile to quail meat.
Okay.
And that was one of many, many, many considerations we had as we brought that to market here.
Right, right. And here's another consideration. It's apparently only available in Singapore right now.
That's right.
What's the reasoning behind this? Why not a different market? Or do you have the impression that as Singaporeans, we're the most experimentative when it comes to food?
Well, I think there's a few reasons. We're working with multiple regulators around the world. Singapore happens to have one of the fastest, most highly skilled food regulators, certainly in this region and around the world, and a process which is quite fast moving. We're also working with regulators in places like the US and Australia as well, but Singapore beat them to the punch and also has by far the best dining scene of those three countries when it comes to that really, really high end of cuisine.
Yeah, we're willing to try something new and we're willing to pay for it as well. I think if my wife's listening to this conversation, definitely that's on the cards. What is the timeline when it comes to creating this Forge Parfait? How long does that take?
So production for us takes about 4 weeks from the very beginning of the process to starting to harvest and produce food. And then we harvest over a four-week period. So from the very start to the very end is about 8 weeks.
Okay.
And we kind of run multiple in batches in parallel. So we're continually operating, continually producing. But within just about 4 weeks, which is much faster than farming anything, you start to be producing cultured meat.
Does this create then, I mean, I'm sure as a chef and also the biochemist side of you, you're starting to go, okay, so where else can I go from here? In my mind, and I imagine too much, I'm thinking maybe one day I can have a dinosaur burger or something like that. Do you think about these things?
I mean, I certainly do. Last year, as a way of really stimulating this conversation about what we want our meat to be in the future, we made a meatball from woolly mammoth, or we modified some cells to make a woolly mammoth meatball.
My colleague Tintin brought that up as well. That was quite interesting,
That was really a way of sort of like stretching people's thinking, getting that conversation started around what we want our meat to look like in the future. I have a slightly different perspective on it. I don't think we're going to want to look to the past to extinct animals when we eat them. I think it's going to look much more like breakfast cereal.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is if I say something like Cheerios, everyone listening is going to understand what that means, what they look like, what they taste like, why you'd choose to eat them. And I think we're going to see a very similar thing happening in meat and with protein is we're going to see meat as brands as opposed to as animals. And so rather than sort of going back and trying to make things that are extinct, I think we'll be using cells as ingredients that we can mix together to create nutritional profiles and sensory experiences and even more convenient foods that are really, really tasty and really good for us and really cost effective. And we'll be buying them purely as branded foods, not as animals.
I saw an episode of this on Star Trek. It's starting to sound familiar.
Star Trek was a little bit of an inspiration,
I'm not surprised. And on that, right, I've got a couple of other questions just to expand on that. As a chef, then do you think about that visual? I mean, it's also in the visual of the food, right?
Obsessively thinking about the visuals.
Like a duck confit. Oh, wow, what a lovely duck confit. And in my mind, it tastes great even before I've eaten it. But if meat or protein comes in the form of bran, how does that work?
Well, I think there's a lot of visual cues that you can take.
Okay.
And so something which we'll be announcing in a few weeks, it's we grill it and serve it pan-fried. And it is, we've paid so much attention to the colouring and the texturing when it browns in the pan. There's so much that we have in our sort of accrued experience of eating meats that tells us that there are certain colours of browning which are going to taste really, really good.
Right.
They have some of these sort of reddish undertones and they glisten, and all of that goes into the development of this. We spend heaps of time thinking about every single element. How does it look raw? How does it look when it's cut? How does it taste hot, cold? Does it glisten? Every single element of that visual and multi-sensory experience of eating is part of the consideration of making any food.
Very interesting, because this really goes into the science and is a different way of looking at things, the colors and how it's received in the brain and what triggers from inside. It's just like, as they say, most of the time if you're cooking, and I've done that before, I don't feel like eating after because the smell makes me full, right?
Yes.
How do you manage or deal with the idea of behind? I know you talked a little bit about sustainability. The idea of ethics, does this come as an issue with what you're exploring, or how do you manage this issue?
At the end of the day, there's nothing natural about the food that we eat, any of the food that we eat. It's all been bred and altered endlessly over several centuries or millennia now of farming, and that's only accelerated over the last 50 years. And if you look at chickens as an example, they're about six times the size they were in the 1960s when they're slaughtered, and they get to that much larger size in a much shorter time.
Yeah.
And so to say, well, what we're doing isn't natural. Nothing about our food system is natural. That's the nature of trying to feed nearly 10 billion people. If we're doing it with natural, purely natural crops, there would be a very, very small global population.
Yeah. There's nothing natural about pricing as well. Why does a kampong chicken cost more? So now that you're experimenting with the local market here, we know the kind of audience that that you're going to get, the kind of diners. Mm-hmm. In your mind, where do you see yourself taking this product in terms of other parts of the world?
So if all goes well, we'll be launching in a couple of other places around APAC over the course of this year. So another smallish market, which I won't share just yet, as well as Australia and New Zealand towards the end of this year. And then if all goes well, next year we'll be moving up towards places like the Middle East, as well as over to the US, and really trying to be everywhere.
Where do you think would be the hardest market? And this is just speculative.
Oh, I think when you look around the world, there are food regulators which are very forward-looking.
Okay.
And places like Singapore and Australia, Israel and the US very much fall into that category.
Okay.
There are then markets on the other end of the spectrum where you have food regulators that are recalcitrant and they want to be the last movers. And the Chinese food regulator and European food regulator have typically been last movers when it comes to any kind of changes in food technology.
Yeah. It helps to build that base case, that test bed in that sense in this part of the world where it's a little bit easier and people are more receptive to these uniquely different foods, I would put it.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, I've been speaking with George Pepu, who's the CEO and founder of Vow. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.